This is listener-supported WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington.
Was a sport. As men, we were taught to hold it in. That's why we don't know how till we older men. If love is a place, I'ma go again. At least now I know to go within. At times, it can take your foe a spin. Heartbreak hotel to your home again. I seen love make a nigga so pretend. Like a story that he don't want to end. Yo,
how beautiful love can be. On the streets, love is hard to see. It's a place I got to be. Loving you is loving me. How beautiful love can be. On the streets, love is hard to see. Gotta reach that frequency. Loving you is loving me.
It's all love where we come from. In the hood, love, we was told to run from. That same hood where the guns sung. We holler love, hoping it become one. Crack got so many lives undone. From lack of love, many hide, some run. I knew this girl with a son who dreamt of acting in plays. Demonstration with a man had her trapped in a maze. Trying to find herself again, much of that she a gave. Love could free us, to her some react as a slave. Funny, we love her more when they relaxed in a grave. Wonder if a thug is raw, is he acting afraid? Everybody loves some, why do I attract shade? Heard of the love of money, but compassion it pays. Talk about it with my youth, so she understand what it is to be loved by a man.
How beautiful love can be.
Greetings, peace, and blessings. You're tuned in to Led by Love, where we're reimagining youth justice. I'm Clinton Lacey, joined by my fabulous co-host, Linda Harley Harper. How you doing, Linda?
I'm good, Clint. How are you?
Doing really great. Thank you. Once again, another week, right? Another show, another opportunity to continue to spread these messages that our awesome guests are bringing.
Absolutely. I'm excited about the show as we bring our gun violence prevention series to an end, marking June as Gun Violence Prevention Awareness Month. And we have highlighted this mission and this topic for the entire month of June. And so I'm looking forward to this big closeout with some fabulous guests that we have. Tonight, we continue the theme of Gun Violence Prevention Month with a chat with a couple of D.C. residents who are working to prevent and protest violence in their communities. The report is called Working Towards a Washington Where We're All Safe from Gun Violence, as reported by WAMU radio reporter Jenny Gathright. Before we begin our discussion, let's go to Sierra with today's news brief. Welcome back, Sierra.
Oh, hi, everybody.
Sierra.
So I have just a couple of news stories for you guys. All right. So a spike in gun violence has Birmingham, Alabama residents outraged, saying reducing shootings must be a community effort with local government support. Residents there have created a national movement called Fund Peace, which is aimed at reducing gun violence. Birmingham continues to mourn the passing of 4-year-old Journey Coleman, who was hit and killed by a stray bullet back in 2019. Onoyemi Williams with the Birmingham Peacemakers said gun violence is just a symptom. It's not the problem. The problem is a lack of resources for everyone involved. Also, in closing, yesterday was a very special day in the District of Columbia. Building Blocks DC and 250 community members held its first unit summit conference. One Love brought together many of those who worked tirelessly to prevent gun violence. Yesterday's event prompted healing, forgiveness, self-care, along with shared strategies to empower residents and communities to get involved with the commitment to end senseless gun violence in our city. And that is your news for Led by Love.
Thank you so much. You know, Clint, yeah. yesterday was a special day. You were able to join us. So it was awesome. You could feel the energy in the room, right?
Yeah, congratulations on that. Really, that was an amazing turnout, an amazing program. You know, the speakers, the food, the most importantly, the fellowship, the coming together, which was the purpose, of course, to build unity and inspire people. And you did it. I mean, it was amazing. So awesome job.
Thank you. And as a point of clarity, this is the second Unity Summit. We can't say annual because we sort of lost the year, but right. Certainly couldn't have done it without partnership with all of the community-based organizations and the city agencies that are in this effort to fight gun violence in the city. You know, just to hear the story about Birmingham, it's just a phenomenon that's across the country. And, you know, it's just an overall sense of desperation and hopelessness that I'm hoping we are able to address across this country.
That's right. And, you know, as you know, better than anyone, there's no simple answers to this. But, you know, even every step counts, and meetings, gatherings like yesterday are what people need to do everywhere, you know, wherever they are, and lean on each other as we figure fight our way through this. But, so, yeah, it's a very difficult time. There's a lot of hopelessness, but I think yesterday was all about hope and action. And so I know, yeah, I was inspired.
Thank you. I think that, you know, the thing about the room is that what an amazing group of talented and committed people that the District of Columbia has working on the front lines every day. And so I left there so encouraged, but we also had a very violent day in the district yesterday. Wow. And so it was kind of bittersweet because we just got to keep at it and keep working on it.
Right. Indeed. But you as a person, as a longtime native Washingtonian and person, not just a resident, but a person in the fight and the struggle for many years, you know, you have a particularly unique insight on how powerful that room was, right? Knowing practically everybody in there, but that's 250 powerful soldiers, right? In this struggle. So I think it was, despite, the horrors that continue, hopefully this will translate into, you know, what we all are working towards is more peace in our streets.
Absolutely. And, you know, that was just a small part of those who are working on the front lines in the District of Columbia. You know, our guests represent some of those other factors that we're going to have to pull in together, too. What we know is that the government is not the answer to gun violence. And so I'm looking forward to having this conversation with our guests.
Yes, indeed.
Over this past pandemic year, DCS, WAMU, spoke with four Washingtonians about how they define safety and how we should think about solutions to violence in our communities. Please join me in welcoming the people who participated in that story. Ms. Jawana Howard, who helped to found Guns Down Friday, Delonte Golston, Senior Pastor of Peace Works DC, and Jenny Gathright. WAMU reporter Jenny Gathright produced the story. Welcome everyone, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
There we go. So let's get right into it. Ms. Gathright, can you share with us your motivation for doing this piece?
Definitely. I mean,
I think I started to think a lot about the word safety last summer. I was covering a lot of protests against police violence, and a lot of the activists at those protests had this chant that wasn't new, but that I was hearing now all the time, which was, who keeps us safe? We keep us safe. And I kept on sort of turning that phrase over and over in my mind. And, you know, the thing about DC is there's so much inequality, and in some parts of the city, a lot of people with resources enjoy a lot of safety from gun violence. But there are lots of parts of the city where people don't have that privilege. Right. And so I think what I wanted to do was take my time with a story that tackled the question of safety from gun violence. And I think I wanted to do that for a few reasons. One, because the numbers were going up, but also because this has been a problem for a long time. And I think sometimes one way to absolve ourselves from facing a problem is acting like it's too complex to tackle, right? But there are people, like you just mentioned, who are working day in and out to find solutions to this problem. And for me, I wanted to kind of like put a stake in the ground and say, okay, like, we're going to cover this issue with a certain level of depth, with a focus on solutions, without fear mongering, so we can say, you know, we're not helpless here. There are people who have solutions who maybe just need to be invested in a little bit more.
So while you were working on the story, what was the biggest surprise that came out of your reporting?
I'm not sure that anything truly surprised me, but I think I came away feeling really grateful, honestly, for the folks that I interviewed, that they were able to take the time to explain to me their work and where they were coming from and their commitment to this issue. And I think one thing that surfaced through the reporting that I'm not sure we hear enough, particularly from the media, is this idea that we shouldn't be afraid of each other, right? I think that's something that Pastor Delonte said that will always stick with me, right? Safety happens when we say we're not going to be afraid of each other. And I think that it just made me think a lot about how fear is such a powerful weapon and how, you know, it's something we should work against.
I wanted to ask you with regards to what you're saying, really, really, you know, interesting and compelling, both the fear issue, right, and how that contributes and plays. But your thoughts, you know, based on your work and analysis of the disparity, or when you're talking about in some places, in some areas, in some neighborhoods, this is not an issue, or in anywhere near to the degree that it is in particularly marginalized or more Black and brown neighborhoods that are struggling with poverty and various other issues. Factor, then I'm curious, what's your analysis as to, and maybe this is a simple question or maybe it's a difficult one, but how do you account for it in your analysis of the disparity between different neighborhoods within a couple of miles of proximity to one another, the vast stark difference?
I think that's something that Ms. Hardy and Pastor Delonte can probably explain better than I can. But I mean, I think a lot of it comes down to resources. And that's something that everybody we interviewed for the story spoke about, that the places that enjoy relatively high levels of safety from gun violence also have more resources. I think that's the answer that I always get, and it's reflected in sort of reporting about other issues as well, right? These things all overlap, and they're all linked mm-hmm. to poverty and racism.
Mm-hmm.
So, Pastor Golston, I'm so glad that you can join us. You're doing such amazing work in our city. So let's move to you. I would love to hear from you about PeaceWorks DC and what you think about Clinton's question about the disparities that we are seeing in our communities that are most greatly impacted by gun violence?
Yeah, thank you so much to both you, Linda, and to Brother Lacey for the invitation, and to Brother Reggie, and to Ms. Hardy, to Jenny, to for doing the reporting. I think, and also let me extend my apologies for not being able to make it to the Unity Summit yesterday. Our daughter had 101 fever yesterday in this age of COVID. We wanted to make sure that we did everything we could to not expose anybody to anything. Thanks be to God, we got our results back this afternoon, and we are, as a household, COVID-free. All the adults in our home are vaccinated, thank God, but I have a three-year-old. Mm-hmm. And a 10-month-old, and you know the vaccines aren't available yet. To all the parents out there, just you know, do what you can to keep your kids safe. As things reopen, we just have to be on the guard now for the common cold, which is something that kids been in the house for a year and a half haven't had to deal with. So right. that fever is a big scare, right? So
exactly.
I thank God for help.
I'm glad you're all well.
Absolutely, your family as well. And Clint, Pastor Golston, you weren't there at the very beginning, but Pastor, we opened up in prayer, and Pastor Golston was scheduled to give the opening Christian prayer. And the amazing thing in the room was once we shared that Pastor Golston was unable to attend, multiple persons ready and prepared to step up and pray. And
No, that's right.
And pray for the group. And so, I told Pastor Golston, family first. I'm so glad to hear good news about your negative COVID test.
I appreciate that. To the issue at hand, here's the reality in our city. What I said to Jenny is what I'll say to you, and that is that the pain of and the trauma of gun violence is just not equally shared in our city. And quite frankly, that's because the resources in our city are not equally shared. And when we look at the issue of gun violence, there is a reason why communities in Ward 7, Ward 8, Ward 5, pockets of Wards 1, 4, and 6 are the communities that are experiencing the breadth of the pain without being looked at as the powerful communities that with enormous potential that we all know that our communities have. And so from a straight strategic point of view, I just wanna align myself with the phenomenal work that our brothers and sisters are doing in Birmingham in the Fund Peace movement. Some of the work that we've done with Peace Walks DC is directly connected to organizing that has come out of Birmingham, organizing that has come out of clergy-led work that has come out of Boston, clergy-led work that has come out of Oakland, California, and clergy-led work that has come out of Ward 8 and Ward 7 right here in DC. When we look at what it means to fund peace, what that means is that our city has the capacity, just as we have seen developers be funded in a way that is large and robust and to the tune of billions of dollars a year for new condos to come up, for there to be cranes all over our city in particular neighborhoods. We also have the capacity to see peace work being funded in the same way that our MPD budget is at $500 million. And when we look at the budget of the Department of Behavioral Health, or we look at the budget of that our brother Clint Lacey was running at DYRS, if we could combine the budgets for DYRS, for the Department of Housing, for the Department of Behavioral Health, we could put the ONES office, the Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement budget, and the Attorney General's CURE program budgets together and still not get $500 million, right? And so just from the point of view that budgets are moral documents that determine and define who is important and what is important, what are we saying in our city? What we're saying in our city is that putting up new condos, investing in developers, and investing in a certain kind of policing historically in our city is more important than investing in intervention, investing in prevention, investing in youth based services, investing in parks and recreation, investing in faith-led and faith-based initiatives that we know have research behind it and when funded can actually produce peace in our communities. And so that's really why certain neighborhoods are experiencing the pain and trauma of gun violence in other communities are not. It's a matter of will. It's a matter of priority. It's a matter of investment. And so I applaud Mayor Bowser, and I applaud the Building Blocks DC team, and I applaud the council for listening to the work of activists and organizers across the city who have been calling for more funding for peacemaking work in our city, and not just responding to violence through policing, but really actually preventing violence through a holistic approach to making peace. And so I'm really grateful that we're in a city that is really seeing the research, not only coming from across the country, but it's starting to see the on the ground efforts that are ongoing to make peace in our city.
Thank you, Pastor Golson. I would love to, so I don't want us to go to break without bringing in our distinguished guests, Ms. Jawana Howard and Ms. Jawana Hardy. And Ms. Jawana Hardy, thank you for joining us tonight. And, you know, to talk about Guns Down Friday is what we want to do, but I would be remiss not to allow you to tell us about your service that you have done for our country.
Yes, thank you. And thank you all for having me. Hello, Pastor Golson. Good to hear your voice.
Hey, Ms. Hardy.
Yes, yes.
Likewise.
Yes. So a little about me and Guns Down Friday. I served in the United States Air Force, actually the DC Guard. And when I came home, I realized that the streets of DC was worse than a war zone. I realized how organized it was when I was deployed and, you know, when I was doing different things. So when I came home and seeing how unorganized it was, it really blew my mind. You know, I think about the military and how they have a 10-year plan for, you know, for whatever's coming. And when it comes to gun violence, it's kind of like, you know, we're scrambling every time there's someone gets killed, it's a new movement. So, you know, when I came in the game, I realized that, you know, someone would get killed, the community would be outraged. And after that, you know, nothing is really being done. So that's when Guns Down Friday comes in. And our mission is to serve communities that are affected by youth homicide, suicide, and mental health illnesses. For me, why certain neighborhoods, oh, I know we have to go on break. I don't know if you want me to
keep going. No, please keep going.
Well, for me, with certain neighborhoods, I got into this work. I didn't know it was a business. You know, I had went to a funeral, Stormaya Jackson. I went to several funerals and I just realized how hurt these families were, and I just wanted to do something about it. But I really feel like the mental health plays a big role in why certain neighborhoods are not, are why they're so different. I'm a little nervous.
No, don't be nervous, and you're dead on. I mean, I think that, you know, one thing that COVID has highlighted for all of us is the importance of, you know, mental wellness, right? And, you know, it's hard to have mental wellness when you're living in extreme poverty and in poor conditions, right? And so COVID taught us that, right?
Yeah.
It showed us that, you know, it matters whether or not you like the people that you live with and whether and how they're living, right? It matters whether your place is comfortable or not and whether or not you have food to eat and, you know, the resources to get what you need. And so you raise a very good point.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Great point.
So let's go back to Pastor Golston. Pastor Golston, I wanted to just talk to you because as a native Washingtonian who left and came back to serve your city, can you talk to us a little bit about how you connected with Peace Walks and what those look like? Can you talk about that with the audience, please?
Sure. Peace Walks DC, just like Ms. Hardy, just like pretty much everybody that's here, it was really born out of pain. I was organizing in Los Angeles with faith communities around issues of police accountability. And that was my primary focus when I was organizing in LA and would partner with different faith groups in the region. And that's how I kind of got connected with even knowing that there were faith based organizations, mosques, synagogues, and churches who were even working on the issue of gun violence. I was exposed to that first, just doing that work on the West Coast. And when I my wife and I moved back home, the church where I accepted a call to ministry, Peace Fellowship, we're in Deanwood. So our church is right at 45th and Sheriff Road in Northeast DC. And when I came to interview for the position, when I got to the block, I immediately knew the block because I had lost a friend of mine there, Olu Williams, had got killed walking home from the Deanwood Metro in 2014. And so as soon as I got on that block, I said, man, I know this block. That was the first thing I observed. The second thing I observed was that I stayed in the Airbnb. And I was like, hold up, there's an Airbnb in Deanwood. My city has changed. And so those were two like key like wake up calls for me. Was one, like the issue of gun violence, and secondly, the issue of displacement. And I began to ask the question of like, what's the relationship between those two things? A year later, my nephew was shot. My nephew Alonzo got shot 5 times uptown, up on Georgia and Upshur Street. That was in December of 2018. And by God's grace, he survived. In January of 2019, there was a triple homicide right outside of the new Macedonia Baptist Church. I called Pastor Walker and I said, what are we going to do? We are losing our kids. You can't save souls when people that are dead. I shared with him, I shared with, at the time, Pastor Ron Miner, who was at the time the pastor of First Baptist Church of Deanwood. He passed last year, unfortunately, from COVID. But I called him, Pastor Frankie Grayton, a pastor named Sean Jagaday, who lived in Ward 7. She and I talked, and Pastor Joanne Davis, who passes a church called Higher Praise off of Nanny Helen Burrow, she and I talked. A few of us, Pastor Devin Turner at Revolution Church, Pastor Freddie Davis at Pilgrim Rest. And we just started talking and trying to figure out, okay, what can we do to not only just save souls, but to make sure that bodies are saved. And so we said we would, based upon some of the research we had done about what pastors were doing in Boston and the Boston Miracle that we had discovered in the 10-point program in Boston and some of the work that was being done in Oakland, we said, what can we do in Ward 7? Just start locally. And we said we would start doing peace walks. And so we met with the ONE's office. We went to, met with Dale and met with his team. And we started to identify, okay, what are the neighborhoods that we need to really focus on? We talked to the commander at 6D. She said she was tired of people just meeting. And she said, you know, I don't want to have to send my officers out on certain calls. Maybe can the faith community partner? And so what we said, what we would do was focus on the most impacted communities and do walks in those communities, but bring along Department of Employment Services so that we can make job referrals. Bring along somebody from one so that they could be a referral made to the Pathways program, which is a fantastic program for people who are at risk of gun violence or have been in contact with the criminal justice system, or what are called tier one or tier two or tier three individuals, people who are at the most risk of either being shot or of shooting someone. And so working with these agencies, we started to pull in, okay, Department of Behavioral Health, what can we do to bring somebody to make a referral so that when churches are out, we're not just trying to get members, right? But we're trying to like bring holistic healing to our communities. And so we started focusing on particular neighborhoods and going back over and over and over again. We would partner with the violence interrupters in those neighborhoods and like and say, hey, maybe if we go into this neighborhood, you can help fry fish, or you can help us with a backpack giveaway. And we started seeing, you know, generals out in the streets like Ms. Hardy, generals like Tia Bell. You know, we started seeing generals like Jay Brown with Community Shoulders. We started seeing people who were already out invested in this work. And so we started saying, okay, then let's just figure out how can we try to partner. And so I've tried to stay localized and focused on Ward 7. But then as there's need that has come up in Ward 8, I've started to talk to pastors there. Like I'm in conversation now with Pastor Nika Brown at Union Temple and Pastor Lamar Staples at Temple of Praise to figure out, okay, what would it look like for churches to basically help fill in the gaps between government and community so that we can provide sort of the glue that helps. If the building blocks are the blocks, then maybe like the churches and mosques can help be part of the glue that kind of keep the blocks together, if that makes sense. So that's kind of like, yeah, that's kind of what Peace Walks is. And we're trying to be just more and more localized so that we're not all over the place. So we're learning. I don't have it figured out. I'm just trying to say that as we learn, we're trying to get even more narrow and narrower and focused and more focused on particular communities so we can start seeing results.
I certainly appreciate what you're describing. And I think that what I've been struck by is it seems like a renewed sense of collaboration in our communities that I haven't felt in a long time. And so, you know, even in the faith-based community, it just seems that COVID, maybe it's COVID or maybe people are just tired, but it does seem like there is a collaborative spirit and a willingness to work all towards this common goal in our communities. And so I would love for you and for the other guests to share your thoughts about that. Do you feel that? Do you think I'm right?
Oh, yes, I definitely feel. I've been doing this work for 15 years, but I started Guns Down Friday 3 years ago. And it was very easy to connect with people because it wasn't many people doing the work. Fast forward to now, I'm like drowning in support. It's like everyone wants to help. Everyone wants to put an end to gun violence. It's affecting more people. Like when I first started, I honestly didn't have, my uncle was shot, but he survived. So I had no one really close to me. But this January, one of my students passed away, and it was one of those students that was, you know, I was really close with. His mom worked at the school. So, you know, it hit home. So it's hitting home to a lot of people. And it's just like, you know, what can we do?
Yeah, I agree. I think we are coming together because we don't have no choice. There's been no funding. There's been no, yeah, up until just yesterday, basically.
Yes.
you know, there's been no, the only incentive is stop. You know, what's the book by Thomas Apt, Stop the Bleeding? That's been like our basic goal. It's like, what do we got to do to get in here and start the bleeding? Like,
yeah.
You know, when I moved back to DC, one of the big factors of coming home was to be there for my nephew. And like, less than a year after moving back, he got hit 5 times.
Wow. You know?
So it was like, there was no strategic plan. It was, this has to stop.
Yep.
you know, and I've tried to pay as much respect and homage to like the OGs in the work, because I realize and recognize that there wouldn't be any groundwork laid if it wasn't for the Donald Isaacs or the Anthony Motleys or the Peaceaholics,
right,
the Reverend Tony Lees, you know, of the world, you know. So so I try to be very careful about how I move as a pastor, because, you know, preachers, you know, it could be a little ego thing, get rubbed the wrong way. So I try to remain a humble profile, as humble as I possibly can, just be out there doing it and don't worry about who gets credit, or don't worry about, just mm-hmm. be out there, just be there. You know, that's the main thing. Just be there.
So. Right. We win and lose together, right?
Yes.
Indeed. You know, I wanted to follow up, Ms. Hardy, with and obviously offer our condolences on, you know, on the loss of your student. And, you know, we offer condolences. We could spend the whole time talking about the lost loved ones. And so we always pause to honor them and to, you know, offer condolences to all the families because of all the pain. On that note, you know, at the summit yesterday, there was a significant amount of conversation about self-care, like, you know, who heals the healer, right? And the peacemakers. And so how do the peacemakers stay well in this struggle? So I just, and to all of our guests, but sorry, I wanted to follow up with you on if you could talk about that and how do you incorporate that into your work?
Yes, I wanted to touch on what Pastor Golson said really quick. He said something, stop the bleed. This past Friday, we had a session called Stop the Bleed. And we went into communities, Woodland, Wellington Park, Willow Road. And we taught the teenagers, the big guys that, you know, that hang out there. We grabbed them and we taught them how to what to do if you were stabbed or shot. And we also gave each guy tourniquets to put on their person. So I was super excited about that. Thank you. But yeah,
that's like literally on a literal immediate note. Right?
Stop
the bleed.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Right.
I've seen so many, you know, people or heard so many stories, even my student. He drove himself to the hospital. So, you know, I just, sometimes I play that in my head, like, did he take off his shirt and stuff his wounds? Like, you know, you know, I just think about stuff like that. How many lives could have been saved if we knew the basic, just the basic needs from a gunshot. So,
right.
Yeah.
Wow. That's powerful.
Yeah. So,
you know,
yes.
Please. No, please go ahead.
Oh, so the mental health. I am a big advocate on just working on your mental health. You know, I was in the service, and when I got out, I was diagnosed with PTSD. So I spent 2 years in therapy. So I'm, you know, I'm big on therapy, and I'm big on taking trips. You know, I'll take a little small budget and I'll just find little places to go just to get away. I always say I try to be dead to the world. And I show others how to, you know, take trips and just introduce them to things that's in the area. You know, DC is changing. You know, I say, if you can't beat them, join them. Let's find, you know, go to some of these nice restaurants and these places that are being built up. So that's how I work on my mental health.
Yeah, it's so important. I wanted to talk a little bit about or ask some questions regarding the how do you balance or reconcile some of the complexities of how this issue is being approached, right? I mean, I think it's important that we grapple with it, that we debate about it, that we struggle with like what it's going to take. And obviously, I think we all agree that there's no one simple answer, but a number of things. But, you know, on one hand, we talk about the resource disparity, right? Which is sometimes the elephant in the room, it seems to me, in terms of the inequity nationally in our society, right?
and in our communities. And then this immediate need to take guns out of people's hands. And I think we're doing a lot of work on the ground to address the immediate issue, from violence interruption and credible messenger work and teaching people how to literally care for their wounds, literally in the moment, right? What are you hearing or seeing or saying about the resource issue, the larger drivers that perpetuate the situation that we're in? That's to any of our guests.
And Clint, I'd like to just add to your question and say, you know, what is your definition of resources? Because, you know, DC is very resource rich. And so, you know, is it that we don't have resources now, or is it that the historical lack of resources in certain communities, we are experiencing the ripple effects of that?
Right.
Any of our guests? How do you define resources?
Well for me, I know it takes money to fund different things. So I don't know too much about budgets. You know, I'm always behind certain people like Pastor Galtson and people that are in that fight, but I honestly don't know much about funding and, you know, things of that nature. But with the resources, I really feel like the mental health, you know, DC is flooded with resources, but no one is, you know, I think we have to find more creative ways to reach people. You know, because I've brung mental health therapists to the community and people still refuse to take that service, but they'll come to me and I'll do different techniques and do different things with them, and they're comfortable with that. So, you know, I'm always telling them, you know, I can't do this by myself. It's a rec center around the corner. It's a basketball court. You know, you have to get out. But people are so, the mental health is just so, you know, people are just such, you know, it took my family to get me to go to therapy after getting out the military. You know, if it wasn't for my family pushing me and making me go, I wouldn't be where I was today. So, you know, I really think people need to work on that, because a lot of the resources are out there and they're just, you know, it's not creative enough for them to want to go. Sometimes it's too far and little things like that.
Yeah, that's so important. I thank you, you know, just for your own personal testimony on that. I mean, it's so, I think that's part of it, of helping to move people to access, right, and open up those kinds of services. So I appreciate that.
I don't want our show to end, and we went right through without a break because it's been such an amazing show. So thank you for your contributions to making our show wonderful, but I don't want our show to end without our guests knowing how to learn more about you. And so I want to start with you, Ms. Hardy, and see if you could share with us where our listening audience can find more information out about you and Guns Down Friday, your social media presence.
Yes. If you would like to reach out to us, check out what we're doing. We're on Instagram, Twitter at Guns Down Friday DMV. That's Guns Down Friday DMV. And you can also check out our website at www.gunsdownfriday.com.
Okay. And Pastor Golston?
Same. You can find us on Instagram at Peace Walks DC. Same thing on Facebook. Peace Walks DC, and you could find information about upcoming Peace Walks at peacefellowshipchurch.org. We don't have nearly as many followers as Ms. Hardy, though. Ms. Hardy got the social media on lock. We got goals. We got Ms. Hardy type goals to be like Guns Down Friday.
So if persons that are listening wanted to support either one of your efforts, they would see how to do that on your websites?
Absolutely. And I can come back to the question about resources as well when there's time.
Okay. Well, let me go to reporter Gathright and ask, I want to know how our listening audience can access your story that you shared if they missed it.
Thank you, Director Harley Harper. You can listen to the story now at WANU.org. You can probably search safety and probably my name and it would come up. Or also you can see the video that my colleague Tyrone Turner produced at either WAMU.org or DCS.com. And WAMU owns DCS, so we share a lot of, we collaborate a lot. And so you can find our work, most of our work at DCS.com and then on the radio at 88.5.
Okay, and Pastor Golson, I want to thank you for that. Pastor Golson, I wanted to go back to you. I would love to know the answer to the question about resources. What do you see that when you dream about the resources that you want to see for the district?
First, I just want to say I fully agree that you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink, right? So I'm fully aware that there's a tension here in our community as it relates to mental health, as it relates to cooperation with even the best of services. So I want to be clear that independent and, you know, individual agency is a real thing. So we have to respect that and find ways to align with that. And at the same time, you know, if you just do just a basic, I mean, Google search of the budgets of the Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement, the budget of the Cure Violence program, the budget of Department of Behavioral Health here in the district. I mean, the budget of the Department of Behavioral Health is about $300 million, which is a lot of money. The budget, proposed budget of the Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement when it started was under $2 million. Now, thank God, it's much closer to, I think about $15 or $16 million, if I'm not mistaken. I could be a little off there. When the Cure Violence office was open, it was open with like about $300,000. So that's like two people's salary, you know what I'm saying? So now I think it's closer to like 7 million or 8 million. And so, but when we look at like what money is being invested in condos and in new housing in the district, when we look at the money that's invested in the police department, for example, it's just not at the same level. You know, just basic math. If you can put the Department of Behavioral Health, the ONE's office, the Cure Violence, you can put all those agencies together and still not get what we pay on our police force. And you also, even what we pay on the police force isn't nearly the amount of money that we put into development in our city. Development is everywhere. Bond financing, tax incremental financing. You know, the ways that we prioritize basically free money for developers, you know, developers getting buildings for a dollar so that they can develop spaces. Like, you got to kind of have to see it from a holistic perspective, y'all. Like, how can you expect for the communities that have been historically the most marginalized, historically the least invested in, to like all of a sudden wake up one day and find Airbnbs in their neighborhood and new people walking around with dogs in the neighborhood, and at the same time having more police, more Karens calling police, more Miss Jenkins too calling police on loved ones, but then not really having like the roving leaders program, like at a level where it used to be, or not really having, you know, prevention and intervention work at a level where like it really could be. Like if we just dream, use the word dream, like if we just dreamed and can envision like a city where we have what we need, it would be easier for young ones and loved ones to step forward and say, I need, if it was clear that the city was like on their side. It would be just a little bit easier to say, you know, actually I have been struggling with, addiction, or actually I have been struggling with depression, or actually, but if all you see is sirens and people with guns on one hand, and then new people that don't have a care in the world, and all they want to do is call the police on you because they're scared, it's kind of obvious where the investments are being made. So don't treat people like they're stupid. You know what I'm saying? Don't treat like our community you know, like we can't, like our eyes aren't open. And because I think that's some of what's driving the crime is desperation. It's like, okay, you're not here for me, so I got to do what I got to do. So that's, does that make sense? I don't know if I'm making sense, but I'm trying to make sense.
Yeah,
out of a
quite a bit. Yeah, you're making sense. And I think, you know, I am encouraged by the amount of money that the mayor is committing to this mission and the fact that there are so many organizations and residents who are laser focused on this mission. And I know that together there can be a positive impact. And I hope that the city council, the budget is now with the city council, that they continue to prioritize gun violence prevention and that we will see that reflected in the final budget for the city, because we need that. We need that. Yes. And we need to invest in those that have been overlooked and marginalized for so long, right? And so, so absolutely.
Can I speak on that for one second?
Absolutely.
The community wanted me to speak on this. I was super excited about the $5,000 grant that was put out. But I just pray and hope that there's a way for people suffering with mental health illnesses to be able to apply for things like that. It's very tough for some of us. You know, I think about the candy ladies in the community. I went to her. She's a guru in fighting gun violence in her community. And I said, you know, it's a grant out. And she said, Ms. Hardy, you know, I can't fill that out. So, you know, I just hope it's a way and pray that there's a way that the people that are being overlooked really get a chance to be a part of ending gun violence.
No, thank you for that heartfelt, heartfelt sharing. That you did, and you raise a good point. I mean, there was, there was the opportunity for a verbal application, but you know, I met a gentleman yesterday who said, "I know there was help out there, but I was intimidated to apply." He was too intimidated by the process. It wasn't that he, and even to ask for the help. So we do have some work to do around that, but I hear you. I hear you loud and clear, and thank you for that. Thank you for sharing and being the community's voice.
Thank you.
So we're going to wrap up. Clint, you want to give a last?
A quick question to Jenny with regards to, you know, in her role as a journalist, any follow-up on this amazing, you know, work that you've done up to now, particular follow-up with the folks that you work with on this story?
Well, I mean, I think I really love staying in touch with people that I've worked with on stories and who have been generous enough to spend time with me for them. So of course, I'm going to keep following Ms. Hardy's work with Guns Down Friday. I'm going to keep following Pastor Golson's work with Peace Walks DC. You know, going forward, I think just keeping this attitude of like, you know, this, again, putting the stake in the ground of like, we're going to approach reporting on this issue from the vantage point of prevention and from, you know, trying to tell it through the people who are most directly involved in the work.
So I just realized I didn't ask you a really important question, which is how did you intersect with these two wonderful guests to create the story? How did you find them?
I know that I met Pastor Golston at a vigil, actually, for Carmelo Duncan. That was the first time we met. Yeah. But I had maybe already emailed him at that point. I don't even remember. And then Miss Hardy, I think, was in a similar way of, you know, sort of seeing her work in the community and then knowing there was a deeper story there and that there was way more that she had to say about that work.
Well, that wraps it up for us. This has been a wonderful show, and we certainly could have a part two to this one, Clint.
Absolutely. Jerry, thank you, our guests, for this really compelling conversation. And even though the month is ending, we're going to continue this conversation and this struggle, needless to say.
Absolutely. And so thank you very much to our guests.
And thank please you. Agree thank to, you so much.
Absolutely. Please agree to come back on the show. And we will absolutely have a part two to this. This was wonderful. And thank you for your commitment to the city and the work that you do.
I'm grateful. Thank you.
Absolutely. Up next is the Uncle Devin Show at 8 p.m. and it's Loveology with Donald Temple. Also tune in to Dr. Richard Wolf and the Economic Update tomorrow at 6 p.m. We're out. This is Led by Love on WPFW.
Shine your light on the world. night, 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 night,